Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord number 60 to 62 and Warlord Annual number 1. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I did look some stuff up. I talked last time about how Grell was sort of writing and not writing the title at this point.
Yeah.
So, according to the Grand Comic Book Database Indexer note for these issues, scripting credits per Mike Grell, October 2006, quote, I worked by dictation, and she typed the scripts, I plotted, she wrote, I got billing credit, unquote, referring to his wife.
Yes, okay.
Now, I don't know, I mean, Grell, October 2006, did he say it in person at a convention? Is it written somewhere? I don't know. Who's the indexer? I'd have to go look that up. So, he was still on the book, and it sounds like they were almost doing the Marvel method at that point.
Yeah.
You know, something to this effect happens, and she fills in the dialogue or something like that. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, that would make sense. He's kind of like the Stan Lee, except he actually created the character. And yeah, she went off, filled in a lot of the details and handed it off to the artist.
Well, he also drew all the stuff. I mean,
yeah, he drew the first however many issues that was.
I mean, there's the grand debate is how much did Stan Lee create of the Marvel Universe and stuff? And I don't know. I wasn't there. I still think that we wouldn't have what we have if he hadn't been there.
I agree. I think it would be different. I think they both contributed. That's where I am.
Oh, yeah. Certainly Kirby, huge input there, too. Ditko on Spider-Man, etc. But the difference here with Grell is he wrote and drew the formative era of Warlord.
Yeah, the whole beginning was all him, and it was just really amazing stuff. And breezy, but yet so much happened. It was crazy.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing a definite shift in the storytelling style at this point.
I'm noticing it. Long-form storytelling, it's changed up quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with issue 60, we've got Travis having been captured. He's about to break free of his incarceration and stuff. And we get some definite action in this issue. He kills the assassins.
Yep.
Darvin, who was running the kids in town as the pickpockets and stuff, goes after Tinder, and Tinder gets out of the cell before Travis gets the helmet off.
To see who the kid was, yeah.
So he knows there's a kid, might recognize the voice, but isn't going to recognize him by sight. Tinder escapes Darvin, but Darvin takes the watch. The imposter, meanwhile, is trying to kind of usurp some power, which Tara overhears and is not happy with Travis because that's who she thinks the imposter is and is going to denounce him. And of course, Greymore comes in with the comfort and the support for Tara. But by this point, Travis has escaped. He's heading to the palace, basically tells the guards, lock the doors behind me. Nobody's getting in or out because he's going to go confront the imposter.
Yeah, so we finally get the showdown in this issue, which was kind of cool.
And Tara sees the showdown. Matter of fact, Travis is losing said showdown because he's been incarcerated for not entirely sure how long at this point.
Yeah, if you get locked up in chains and can't move for a while, you're definitely not at the top of your game. And I imagine wearing that big helmet, he wasn't fed all too well, if at all.
Yeah, well, I think there was a missed opportunity here for them to go into the time flow of Skartaris because it seems to be subjective because we had times where I guess it was early on where Tara and Travis went to a village. He went to go get a sword created. She went to the spa, essentially. And different amounts of time elapsed for the two of them. She had a nice afternoon. He had a good day and a half or two.
Correct.
So if it's subjective somehow that way, he could have been incarcerated for longer or shorter than other people thought.
That's true. Yeah, that's really true. Because that's a perfect way to explain this because, you know, I started to question in my head, you know, how are they getting water in there? You know, how is he not dead? How are they feeding him? Stuff like that. But like you said, the passing of time in Skartaris is kind of skewed. And it's almost like pockets of time are happening at different speeds, depending on where you are.
Well, and how tired you get and how exhausted you get and stuff is independent from how much you experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe he didn't have to be fed that often and stuff, but for him, it still could have felt like months. I don't know.
Exactly. And from what you hear, like, I've watched shows, you know, people being locked up in prison and stuff like that. And the worst thing you can do is be in isolated confinement.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he latched on to Tinder so much, because wearing a helmet, just being at that, almost like your senses are muddled at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see anything. It's just continual darkness. It's just got to be miserable. I think I'd lose my mind.
Well, and particularly for Travis, a man of action.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the fact that he was losing that battle at the end was not too surprising, given the shape he was in. But I loved it when Tara is like, I've got two people. I can't tell them apart. I'm going to quiz one of them with something only Travis would know. And she misremembers the question, essentially.
Yeah.
So he answers it. She says, nope, that's wrong. And he's like, wait a sec. You know, because he knows he's going to have the right answer if he can figure out what the hell she's referring to. He goes through it. He does. She shoots the other guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was pretty quick and easy and stuff like that. But what I loved was the epilogue where it's like, oh, yeah, it's the Praetor who was behind all this, because Travis had found that out from one of the assassins. And we end with him getting imprisoned like Travis was.
That was kind of cool. I like that. Because he definitely deserved it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't know that we're ever going to see him again.
Yeah, I think he's done.
So I think this goes to your point, though, of the story arc, the long-form storytelling and stuff, because we've been going through this storyline for, what, 3, 4, or 5 issues now?
Exactly. It was a definite change, and I think it's when he came off from the double duty of being the artist and the writer is where it started to shift a little bit, and he's thrown out a plot, and I'm thinking, also at this point, he's written so many stories about what's happened with Travis at this point that it's kind of like, I don't want to say you spend all the ammo and your ammunition and your clip, but it's got to be tough. And so I can see where, like, okay, I have this action adventure, this stuff happening on. Let's slow it down a little bit, and I can use that over the next 5 or 6 months. And his wife kind of spreads out the story a little bit as she's typing up the script.
I kind of think he went from actively writing everything to this dictation method or whatever. There was some shift in responsibilities or workflow. And that's when we started getting the more decompressed story.
Yeah, it definitely got decompressed. And I think basically the script would be like, hey, I want to have a story where there's the showdown between these characters and Tinder, but it's still hanging out there. We're not going to give it all away right now.
Yeah, because, I mean, so many of the earlier issues were the done-in-one thing.
Yeah. What did you like more?
You know, that's a good question. I like we get a little more depth, have a little more time for some flashbacks and stuff, so I don't think this is bad by any stretch, but I like the fast-paced, more done-in-one nature with the overall arc that we had earlier on.
Yeah, I'm noticing that myself, which is a little bit weird because that was comics even a little bit before I was heavy into comics. You know, I was born in 73, so, you know, when Warlord first came out, I was really young, but here I am at age 51. And that speaks to me a little bit more that, okay, everything happens, done in one, wrapped up, and now I can set down this issue. And if I pick up an issue 2 or 3 days later or 2 or 3 months later, you kind of can jump right back into it. And I think when you get into this decompression here, it's a little bit more difficult to pick up.
Well, and this is where I think the common vocabulary used to talk about comic stories is wanting a little bit. Because done in one, there's a couple of flavors of that.
Yeah.
There's the beginning, middle, end, self-contained, firewalled off kind of done-in-one. And then there's kind of what we had here, where there were some definite plot lines and threads that spanned issues.
Yes.
But every issue had an aspect of it that was done-in-one. They are walking into town, they hit whatever excitement happens on the title spread, they deal with that for the next 15 pages and rinse repeat to the next issue.
Yes.
So not self-contained, not to the point where you could shuffle the order of the issues and it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, this is definitely not a modern comic, even at this point. It's not what we see today with the issues we get of whatever issue of Batman or Spider-Man that you pick up.
Yeah, yeah. Because even though this thing's been going on for 4 or 5, 6 issues or whatever of The Imposter, I think that would have played out even more slowly today. But the fact that we're getting something akin to the modern trade paperback experience is interesting and, frankly, unusual, certainly for this title, and I would argue for this time frame.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with you. And I will say, I did like the beginning when Grell was the sole creator on this and the movement that we had. To me, it was a little bit more, for lack of a better word, fun. It was more enjoyable to have this action adventure comic. Wow, this is great. And I think since we've moved to this longer form, a little bit more decompressed, even though it's not like a modern comic, there's been less of you and I talking about, man, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, wow, I miss when comics are like this. I'm not saying that now. So it's fundamentally changed. And I would say for the worse, while I'm still enjoying the comic and I'm still having fun and it's a ton of fun, I miss comics like they were, like that, back in the early issues.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. And that's part of why I put really late 70s, early 80s as kind of the sweet spot for me, particularly the DC variant of it, because I was not reading Marvel off the rack at the time for the most part. You would have stories that, again, as a single issue, were fulfilling. You might have stories that spanned two issues, sometimes even three or something, for like a JLA-JSA crossover or something where they wanted to end on a big cliffhanger and have you, you know, teetering on the edge for a month before you got the rest of it. But you really got your 50, 60, 75 cents worth at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel that way today, and we're paying way more than that.
Yeah, now you're at $5.
Yeah, and I definitely think this change, I think, happened within the last year's worth of this title, from we were getting the done in one to really maybe even, you know, just the start of this arc when we started getting the, okay, this is going to play out over the longer time frame.
Yeah. And I would say it's weird, but it's noticeable. And I've just noticed our tenor when we talk. It's changed and it's weird. So I, like you said, that 70s to the early 80s is the sweet spot. And as we move forward, comics are fundamentally changing to the point where I feel like that a little bit of the magic is lost, a little bit of the breeziness and just fun of the medium where you jump in and look at pictures and have a fun story, almost like it can be consequential, but at the same time, it's inconsequential. And you can pick it up and read that story four or five times to get more to it versus having to go through each little dialogue box and him to tell me what the character's thinking, you know, or really delve into it. Almost make it a little bit of a chore to get more out of the comic than what I was getting before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, you look at those first half dozen or so issues of this title and, you know, toss in that first issue special as part of that, and look at how many story points, how many big things happened across those issues versus, again, the last five or six that we're at now.
Yeah.
And again, the last five or six have been good, but they've been slower than the original run of the book.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. This is going to play out over the three issues, this story, and there'll be some threads left to go on forward.
Yeah. Now, we do have a backup on this of Arion. Honestly, it wasn't working for me at all, so I really don't have a whole lot to say other than, yep, it was there.
It was there. That's where I'm at.
Shall we move on to issue 61?
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, we get some interesting stuff here because the imposter's been dealt with, but we're dealing with the aftermath of it. And this, again, goes back to the change in storytelling format. How often did we have a story earlier in this run where we dealt with the aftermath of it for the next issue?
Pretty much never.
Yeah. Tara's reign is in peril because of all of this. And then we get some stuff between Travis and Greymoor that was really kind of interesting. You know, first, are they fighting? Are they sparring? How is this going? We really get a lot of those two together in this issue, talking over drinks and some stuff like that. But to me, the pivotal part of this issue is kind of the subplot with Darvin, who's going to have Griff dye his hair red and pretend to be Tinder, because Darvin's got that watch, that armband, and they're basically going to make a play of, hey, this is the Mincing Prince of Shambhala.
Exactly. They're setting that up here. The stuff between Greymoor and Travis was interesting because the past love, the first love versus the man I'm with today, and now she's having feelings about both of them because of what happened. That's a whole mess. But yeah, like you said, the bigger story is what's going to be happening with the fake Tinder, because we just had a fake Travis. Now we're going to have a stand-in Tinder. And literally near the end of this issue, Joshua kind of sneaks up to the castle, sees his mom and dad, and takes off because he's like, I don't want to step in and disturb thing. He doesn't know that that's his dad and that's his mom.
Yeah, he has recognized that the prisoner he was talking with is the king.
Yep.
That the king has the watch band. He wants his watch band back, tries to get it. He actually breaks into the palace and stuff, but realizes, wait, it's on the queen. The queen is with the king in bed. That's not going to work.
Yep.
So he bails. Now, what puzzles me is Tinder leaves Shambhala at this point.
Yeah, he leaves the town. So there's nobody to say, hey, that's not me. I'm Tinder, you know?
But why does Tinder leave at this point?
That I didn't understand. It was really weird, and it just seemed like something he wouldn't do at this point.
I mean, to me, something happened at this point in the writing process. I don't know what motivated it or whatever.
Yeah.
But they get about halfway through this issue where it's going to be, okay, we're going to have a fake Tinder. We're going to do this play of it's the Prince of Shambhala and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then really at page 13, we've got this other kid with the eye patch who is smoking as he's kind of guarding their new headquarters or whatever, tosses a match, apparently burns the entire place down, killing all three of them, him, Griff, and Darwin.
Yeah, exactly. Kills them all.
And boom, this whole storyline is cut off at the knees.
Exactly. So it flipped, and then I was wondering, why did he run away? Because the setup was to have that kid step in, the fake Tinder. And then you're like, oh, the real Tinder's going to be running. But like you said, with that burning and killing of everyone, and the watch is found, I didn't understand why he ran away. I didn't understand, other than we don't want to resolve the Joshua issue at this point.
Well, it seemed like they were going heavy into it, and then suddenly a 180, and they're not. I mean, there's the saying in Skartaris to expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
And at this point, the expected storyline is the fake Tinder storyline, so I think we should unexpect the expected at this point, because we're not getting it.
Yeah, that was so weird. I didn't really understand what happened there, if there's a breakdown, or it felt like the stories were tighter before, and that was a miss right there for me.
Yeah, it was too sharp a turn in direction. They were building it up and then literally burned the story down to the ashes in the span of the issue.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. Whereas what they were doing with Travis and Greymore was basically setting up a love triangle of Greymore is like, you're going to leave town, and when you do, I'm ready to step in.
Yeah, that is going to be weird. Because I don't think Travis is the type to put up with that. And as we have seen, he can best Greymore.
Yeah.
Greymore's playing with fire.
Greymore's playing the long game.
Yes, he is.
He's already got a measure of Travis of, this is a man of action. He's not staying here at the palace. So when he leaves and I stay, you know?
Greymore's a snake, in my opinion. He loves the girl and he never could be with the girl because of circumstance in their families.
Right. But he realizes Travis is going to get in his own way. He doesn't need to get in Travis's way.
Exactly. So me thinking the worst things, I'm like, what is he trying to do here? What's his game? Because he literally can't marry her because of his lineage and who Tara is. She's with someone else.
I think he can marry her now.
Now he can. Now he could, I guess.
The king was in the way. She's queen. If she wants to marry him, done.
And if she does, oh my gosh. I'm just like, the most emasculating thing that could happen to a guy like Travis. This rough and tumble man's man. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to get more backstory on Greymore and stuff, that he'd been in town a couple of times over the years, et cetera, et cetera. But it's world building for the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Versus this issue, which again is categorically different than the old storytelling style. And then when we get near the end and Travis is basically, Tara, here's the watch back. Sorry I couldn't bring the kid, because we think he's dead again. And just reopening that wound.
That's rough, yeah.
Not where I expected the story was going.
Exactly. It got really dark there. Really dark. And I don't trust Tara to make a good decision moving forward. That's where I am with her. For her to be even questioning and stuff, and then what happens in the next issue, I think there's some dark times on the horizon.
Definitely, I think there's a status quo shift and things changing. But I think that was as much behind the scenes as on the page. Because again, I think the plan at one point in somebody's mind was that this next arc would have been the, is Griff able to pass off his Tinder or not?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and how does that happen?
I wanted to see that happen, but my guess is they were going that direction. This is just a guess. And they said, man, we literally just did that with Travis. We can't do that again. When the kid starts acting all weird, they're going to think, this isn't my kid. Or this isn't the kid who was helping me out. I don't know. Maybe they found it too difficult to write, the same as what came before.
Yeah, but they were building that up throughout the last arc.
Which is why, yeah, why did we spend all this time on this just to literally scrap it? Felt like it was crumpled up and thrown in the trash.
The entire reason the Griff character seemed to exist was to be used as a stand-in for Tinder at this point, and then they decide not to go there.
Just bizarre. Really bizarre. I try to, like, go through reasons why they do this, and I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah. This one, for me, just stopped me in my tracks in terms of this was not where they were going.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened or why, but this was just shutting down of a storyline so quickly and definitively.
Was that, weird.
Yeah.
Jarring.
Jarring, weird, strange, and surprising.
Yeah, surprising. And I would say surprising not in a good way.
No.
Why'd we do that?
Yeah. To me, this was a turning point for the title in terms of something somewhere happened.
Yeah. Something happened, and I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
Yeah. And disappointing.
Yes, I agree completely. And so I can see the book is changing at this point, and I don't want to say I'm falling out of love with it. I still love the book, but this storyline, I'm kind of falling out of love with it a little bit.
The book is clearly not what it once was.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. It's a different book.
Now, we do have another Arion backup. Again, wasn't working for me. So shall we move on to issue 62?
Yeah, let's do that. This is another one that's interesting.
Yeah, this one was kind of interesting because we get the return of Mykola Rostov.
Yes.
Which we'd last seen in issue... Man, I'm trying to remember which issue. It was a while back.
Yeah, a while back. The guy who turned into the werewolf.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we're getting some repercussions of stuff because Travis has to break up a fight, which at first I thought was a street fight, but it's a fight amongst the Royal Guard. And it comes down to they were fighting over Tara's relationship with Greymoor because everybody is aware that Tara and Greymoor have gotten rather close or still rather close while Travis was in captivity. Travis is there with the guard because he's working out with them trying to get back in shape. And it's Greymoor that tells Tara what the source of the fight was because Travis doesn't realize. And Travis is also Travis, so he's getting anxious to get out and go do something.
Yep.
And then when there's this whole thing with wolf attacks at nearby farms, there's an excuse of, okay, let's go have a royal hunt and go chase down the problem that way.
Yep. Travis being who he is, he's out there for the adventure and to do things. He's honestly not the best suited for being in a court or a king or honestly, I hate to say it, but you don't see him as a family man, even though he's projected that way. He's more of the swashbuckling hero out there, no ties, just running around from adventure to adventure. And so he takes any opportunity to do that. And Tara is there with this other guy.
I think it's not that he takes any opportunity to do it, but that he can't help himself.
It's who he is.
It's who he is. He wants to help people. It's not like he's looking for adventure. It's just, it keeps coming his way.
Yeah, that's true. Although I would say usually at a point in your life, I equate it to like the guy who likes to go hang out with his buddies and watch football or hang out with his buddies and do this or do that. Every now and then you need to pass on the buddy night and maybe spend a little time at home with the wife when you feel like something's off. And I think he made the wrong decision here. It doesn't have to be all the time. You can be who you are, but he always makes the, I'm going with my buddies tonight because that's what who he is. And so I'm like, Tara has another suitor right there at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that Greymoor is there waiting in the wings and Travis knows this.
Yeah.
Makes it some questionable decisions, but he also realizes that Rostov is in with the wolves and that he's kind of out of control at this point. So when he realizes that Jennifer knows magic now and might be able to help this guy, and he hasn't seen Jennifer for a bit, I kind of get why he goes off.
Yeah, exactly.
But I loved the scene where Tara confronts him about all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because Travis is changing out of kind of the royal consort outfit into his warlord outfit because he's got to go adventuring. And Tara is not having any of it. She stops just shy, or really gets cut off before she can say, don't come back.
Yeah, she's right there.
And I love how Travis sees Greymoor as he's walking out. And after he goes, the first thing out of Tara's mouth is, change the locks.
Yeah, he's not welcome back in the house or the castle.
I think he'll come back, but the question is, what's the status quo going to be at that point? And this is another opportunity that they could have for, again, the perception of time being different for people.
Yeah, my mind goes to dark places that he's going to come back, and she's going to be a child and someone else's child at this point. And a weird thing that a thing that told me that Mike Grell is not scripting this is Travis has changed how he talks, projects, and how he is a little bit. And you have way more of the emotional relationship stuff in here, which explains it. His wife is scripting a lot of this because you're seeing more of the emotional tugs and overtones and feelings and stuff like that. And we used to get a lot of Travis being like, hey, woman, you know, hey, you're like very macho type stuff. You don't see the macho coming forth as much through the words in the comic anymore.
I think the panel we get near the end with Travis and Gray Moore kind of exchanging a glance as Travis leaves.
Oh, yeah, that's brutal.
That would have had some good dialogue from Grell.
Yeah, he would have said something to Gray Moore. He wouldn't have just walked by very softly, like right then. That's not who Travis is.
It could have simply been Travis saying, keep an eye on her, and Gray Moore, oh, I will, you know, or something to that effect.
Something would have happened. He would have said something, and at this point, he suspects and he knows, and I'm just like, me being who I am, I'd be like, I'm not leaving my lady here. This guy's coming with me, or she's coming with me, or I'm not going. I would take care of this situation first. I'd be like, I'm going to, for lack of a better term, claim my territory, that she's mine. You know, I'm going to put this to rest. I would not leave things up in the air and walk out the door. This is crazy.
Well, I think there was also an opportunity for them to explore Travis feeling a little put out of he was held captive and nobody noticed.
Exactly. You really thought that of me? I think I would hurt if people who had known me, especially the woman I loved, just thought the worst of me. Really? You thought that I would say that? You thought that I would raise my hand to you, not to make her feel worse, but I would just be surprised.
But to get her side of it. I mean, we spend 3 pages in the garden with Graymore and Tara frolicking about or whatever, versus Travis. Maybe he'd heard from the guards what the imposter had been doing. And Travis, it's like, again, how did you not know that wasn't me?
Yeah.
And there could have been a good, I don't say fight amongst equals or whatever there, but something where I think if Grell had been more hands on keyboard, hands on paper, you know, whatever, on the scripting and stuff, we would have had Travis leaving because it was a mutual decision of him and Tara that they need a little time apart.
Yeah, yeah. Something it needs to happen here. It's just weird. I see how they are. I see what's going on here, and I see what they're doing. And yet, the aggression and that we've seen from him, and the people who would have his back, especially men of arms, you know, the guards. Mm-hmm. Somebody would have warned him, and I don't think he'd be having. I think Graymore would have been toothless probably by this point. Or I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but it just speaks to who he is. You know, that's who he is. It's who he's always been. And for him to just walk away and say, see ya, I'm out. All right. I've been locked up and I'm out of here. Just bizarre. But at the same time, he has always left in the past. So there's that.
Well, he's, again, that's who he is. Mm-hmm. But everybody understands he's doing it to fight the good fight or something like that. And I get Travis not having had anyone in the palace royalty or governmental aspect to realize, oh, that's not Travis or whatever. I don't get how, like, the chief of the guard or some of those people didn't notice there being a difference and that's not Travis.
Something. You figure somebody has to know what's up. She just thought he was a drunk, I guess, at that point, even though he never drank before, really, that we'd seen, which is bizarre. And once again, that's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I guess for me, among the guards, the soldiers and stuff like that, they would have gotten to know Travis better. Because presumably they'd been in many fights with him.
Yeah, exactly. I found myself just being who I am. And this is a lot of me and my baggage and stuff that I've seen and experiences turning more and more to with these last 3 issues. I'm like, I fell out of love a little bit with the book, but also a real dislike for who Tara has become. And I'm not saying that as I still like her as a character, but I'm like, man, sometimes she comes off as wishy-washy, her emotions, I like whoever's here, and love, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. I'm like, I do not like this person. Well, and that's just how I was feeling reading this. I was like, oh, I don't like her.
She's definitely not the warrior princess we had earlier in the book.
Exactly. They were like a tag team, both adventures, both tough, both almost equals, and at the same time, very in love with each other.
I think that goes back to, what was it, issue 60, when the imposter, 60, when he was trying to take some power in one of the meetings or whatever. She overheard, and she basically skulks off to go do some reading and research to figure out how to fight him politically.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Tara. The classic Tara would have basically gone in and drawn a sword and said, what the hell do you think you're doing, buddy?
Exactly! Exactly! Yeah, so you're feeling the same thing I am, that where the characters are a little bit off. And I was feeling that as I was reading, I'm like, it's the characters, but they've changed. And so it makes sense, because when you go to those things, like you said, where he said, oh, I was basically plotting at this point, it starts to make sense. You're like, this is not the same writer. Even though he's credited as writing, it's not the same writer. And it's definitely showing, and the book is changing.
Yeah, and I think the way the pages are laid out and some stuff like that, the book definitely has a different feel to it and not as good as it had been.
Yeah, I agree. Before we had Texaria on the art, was it? I think it was. Now there's a different artist on it.
Yeah.
And so now we're like Tom Mandrake, or no, Jan Dersima.
It was Jan Dersima who had been doing the Arion backup.
Yeah, exactly. It's just all changed, and I would say not for the better at this point.
Jan Dersima does good art in terms of the line work. It's just how the characters are depicted and shown feels a little off.
Yeah, exactly. I do miss the old Grell, which I will say, out of these four issues that we read, we haven't discussed the last, the annual. What made me really happy when we got to the annual is we got Grell.
Yeah. Before we get to the annual, let's talk just for a moment on the Arion backup.
Oh, yeah. Arion, okay.
Because there was one, and the main thing of relevance of it is the last one, because that is moving out to its own book at this point that went for 35 issues and a special.
Wow.
And it's funny, because as much as this backup has not been working for me, I recall sometime, it must have been late 80s, early 90s, probably at San Diego Comic-Con, where I bought the whole thing lock, stock, and barrel and read it and enjoyed it at the time. And Cooper Berg and Dersima were the creative team here and on the book, so it just, I was surprised how much the backup hasn't been working for me, but this is one where it actually graduates from a backup to a full-blown book.
Yeah, the thing that I think we get with some of the backups is like with it being like 8 pages or whatever it is, 8, 10 pages.
Well, 6 in this case.
Yeah, 6. A lot of times you give fewer pages, they try to pack in more words. They try to pack in more stuff. And it doesn't work as well as when the creative team is given 20 pages. It completely reads different. It can be the same type of story or the same creative team. But I think when you give them a little more air, it lets the artist breathe a little bit better and you get something a little bit better. I think too few pages, it's really hard to pull off with something like this.
Well, yeah, because typically it's an 8-page backup and a 17-page lead.
Yeah.
Now factor in one of those of the lead is a 2-page title splash.
Yeah.
So effectively 16 pages of the lead and 8 for the backup, but 2 backups does not equal a 1 lead because, again, the pacing where you've got to stop the story, re-pick up the scene and stuff like that, it's hard to get a good story for a lot of creators in that tight of a space.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was part of what was hurting the Arion backup for me here. Part of it was also the story they chose to tell.
Yeah, it's true. I may check it out in the future, honestly, but I'm not going to promise. There's too many things I got to read, so.
That's fair.
It probably won't come up, but it could come up one day. We'll see.
But with Arion leaving the book, Jan Dersima now has a monthly book to go do over in Arion, so we are getting a new artist on Warlord in issue 63, which we'll cover in the next Warlord Spotlight, and it's going to be Dan Jurgens.
Oh, Dan Jurgens. Okay, that'll be awesome. I like Dan.
Yeah, great artist, great writer, too.
Yeah. I know him a lot from Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when I think of Dan Jurgens, that's what I think of.
Superman from the 90s and stuff. Booster Gold from the 80s. He's done a ton of stuff. Time-tested creator, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, shall we go to that annual?
Yeah, let's do that. And I was very happy with this.
Yeah, we've got Grell on the writing and the art. Now, I don't know exactly when this takes place in the timeline, but it came out a week after Warlord 62, so that's why we're doing it here. Travis is traveling with Shakira, so that dates it back, I don't know, at least 8 issues or thereabouts from when those two were kind of wandering about.
Yep. Doesn't this seem like something Grell wanted to write?
Oh, absolutely.
I was like, man, this is Warlord.
Yeah, this is a lot of the stuff that I think the last couple of issues were kind of missing and stuff. Now, granted, Tara is nowhere to be found here because, again, it's Travis and Shakira adventuring. They come across this princess and the minstrel with her. They're being attacked by these savages. And man, this princess is the epitome of a spoiled brat.
Oh yeah, she's the worst.
And Travis comes in, saves the day, and basically explains that this area they're in is kind of a holy land for these quote-unquote savages, and basically takes them into one of these Atlantean control centers, pulls up the history of Skartaris on the monitor. He's got to narrate it because apparently the audio system is shot. So I think this is a decent intro to Warlord. I'm not going to say it's the best, but I think it's decent. And then we get a little bit more of what's going on with this minstrel and this princess.
Exactly. And you find out that he's actually kind of in love with the princess.
Oh, absolutely. But I think he gets cured of that before the story ends.
Yeah, because she's going off to get married to some rich royalty somewhere, and he's escorting her and the minstrel. But I really, not to sidetrack everything, loved Shakira in this book. It was so awesome seeing her again and seeing her cat essence even come out more than we've seen in the past.
Well, like when she's snagging the tiara or whatever off the princess and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Definitely there's some humorous moments there. And I like at one point where there's the, is she a cat that turns into a woman or a woman that turns into a cat speculation.
Exactly. It was so much fun and so much interplay to where here's this beautiful princess. You end up almost loathing her near the end because of how she is.
Mm-hmm.
This was just such a fun story. I just loved it. I loved everything about it. This is, I don't want to say the perfect Warlord story, but this is a great jumping on point. If people haven't read it before, you pick this up, you'd be like, oh, this is great. This is fun.
I definitely don't think it's a perfect Warlord story, but it absolutely is a fun Warlord story.
Oh, yeah. The girls will even get, you know, they're going at it at one point, kind of fighting, and seeing the princess get thrown on her behind, it was just fantastic.
Well, there's a sense of humor about it, a sense of action, adventure, fun, whatever, that was completely missing from the Travis imposter story arc.
Exactly. That's a perfect way of putting it. And the humor goes in so many ways, from seeing Shakira catching a bird as a cat at the very beginning pages to them trying to set up the minstrel to be with the princess when she goes to kind of bathe in the water and he's covering his eyes, you know, while the princess is taking a bath in the river. And they release a lizard to go after her so that the minstrel will go and rescue her and be the hero so that she'll fall into his arms, and he can't even do that correctly. It's just hilarious.
Yeah. Well, and there's a not just the humor, but the lighthearted nature.
Yeah. And even when you get to the adventure stuff, it's a little bit lighthearted. It's, the stakes are high, but they're never ridiculous, like the world's going to end or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like when they get to Doomsgate, you know, everyone else is like, people who go in there, they're lost. We're not even going to bother. And Travis is like, well, what's the big deal about this place? Which is the epitome of the character at times. Nothing in this world scares him because he doesn't know any better.
Yeah. Who cares?
And he's got the ability to back that up is the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is really kind of cool. So, I mean, it was awesome because he went right into Doomsgate. Let's go in. Let's put on some disguises. And they're off looking around and adventuring inside the city.
Mm-hmm. And we get a couple of panels where there's not much dialogue, but there's certainly a lot of action and stuff like that. And again, that's something I think the imposter storyline was just missing. It was character moments, lovey-dovey stuff in the garden, or a little political intrigue, or, you know, what's going on with the street urchins and stuff like that. But there wasn't the sword play. There wasn't the roller coaster ride.
Exactly. And one thing that I really love that Grell did here, and Grell does this a lot, you go back to the dinosaur, I think that was in the first issue, where they have the T-Rex kind of attack. Here you have the giant spider.
Yeah.
And this is, in all honesty, I think Grell kind of tipping his hat to Conan, just saying, hey, I'm a fan, because Conan would always fight these big creatures, you know, whether it's a gigantic ape or a big spider. He fought spiders all the time. And so here he is doing that thing. But for fans of Conan like me, I look at this, I'm like, man, this feels like Conan. This is awesome. And you get excited and you're like, this is a comic I love. This is a comic I love. And it makes me feel a little bit of regret that those last three issues, that was kind of taken away.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think it was, I don't know if it was how they divided up the work or the workflow process or what, but something was pulling a lot of these fun aspects out of the story of the main title.
I agree, yeah. I wish Girl could have stayed on for the whole 130 or whatever issues it was, but that's not going to happen.
No, but he was on it for well over two-fifths of it, not too far from half of it.
Yeah.
Because by story page count, I think the middle of the run is issue 75, I think it is. So we're not that far from it.
I am literally very thankful that Mike Grell created this title and that I was able to experience it, because this is stuff that I really enjoy. And I know you enjoy it too. This is fun. And so annual one was fantastic. And I really love the epilogue, how he stuck the comedic ending.
Oh, yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah, with the princess explaining the way of the world to the minstrel, and then realizing what the way of her world is going to be like, and whoops, she's made some decisions, and, well, she's kind of stuck. So, yeah, I thought it was fun. I like this. It was lighthearted. Again, was this the best Warlord story? Absolutely not. Was it a good, fun one, and one that we needed at this point, given where the main title's at? Absolutely.
Yeah, it was the breath of fresh air from these previous three issues, and this was a nice capstone before we move on to our next arc.
Yeah. Well, we've kind of started that arc, I think, potentially with Rostov coming back. I don't know.
I agree. I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But it's also possible with Jurgens coming on in the next issue that that's kind of the start of a new era or some such. I was just so disappointed with issue 61, where they were going in one direction and then just completely U-turned on us, that it kind of disappointed me a bit.
Exactly. The setup was supposed to be figuring out who the son was and having the imposter kid, the real kid, one's tall, one's shorter. How does he know? Is it the stories I told him? How do I fish this information out? The watch isn't there. How do they come to the conclusion this is my boy? And that's the thing that could have taken care of the whole issue with Greymoor, is what I'm thinking. Is it they're reunited with their son, you know, whoa. And instead, we just flushed that right down the toilet and took him off into the countryside. It's like, okay.
Well, how fun could it have been if it was Greymoor who realized this isn't their son?
Yeah, that would have been hilarious.
Because he would have been the absolute last person they would have listened to about that.
Exactly. So that would be.
For them to get two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the issue and then spin on a dime there, I don't get it.
Me neither. I am with you there. And I'm kind of frustrated with it, but I'm hoping for better things to come. Fingers are crossed.
Yeah, same here. And we've only got a couple of more issues with Grell on the book before Kerry Burkett takes over as writer in issue 72.
Okay, so we're almost done with his.
Almost done. But I'm hoping we get some good stuff, because we've got enough for another, really, two more episodes, and then it'd be the start of the one after that we get the final Grell story before moving on.
Yeah, but I'm glad where we ended. It was fun.
Yeah. The other thing we're going to start getting with the next issue of Warlord, issue 63, is the Barren Earth backup feature.
Oh, okay. Is that any good? We'll see.
I remember enjoying it and enjoying Conqueror of the Barren Earth, the four-issue miniseries that kind of tied it off. Ron Randall is the artist on that, and Gary Kahn's the writer. Ron Randall later takes over art for the Warlord's story itself in later issues, and he's a solid artist. He's doing Trekker these days.
Just out of curiosity, did that spin off into a regular series, or was it always a backup, the Barren Earth?
Well, it spun off to that four-issue Conqueror of the Barren Earth miniseries to tie it off.
Okay, gotcha.
But it ran for, I want to say, 13 or more installments. It was
13 more, okay.
It was a long-lasting one, actually. It ran for 23 installments.
I was typing in Barren Earth just to pull it up, see what I was going to be looking at. It looks like I saw a blonde lady with a sword.
Yep.
Hey, that works for me.
It fits the style of the storylines. It's sci-fi, sword and sorcery sort of thing, or at least sword and sandals. But it starts in issue 63 and it runs through issue 88.
Fingers crossed that it's good and it works for us.
Yeah, hope so. If it is, we may end up doing a side back issue spotlight or whatever on the miniseries that ties it off.
Hey, that sounds good to me.
If we enjoy it.
That's a big if. A big if.
If it's like Arion, we may not. But I recall enjoying it. And again, Ron Randall's a solid artist.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
So Again, I'm still enjoying the title, but it's a noticeable difference than how it had been.
Yes.
And I hope it kind of course corrects. Again, I read all this stuff over the span of like a weekend about 15 years ago. But 15 years is a long time, and I've forgotten quite a bit, too.
That's crazy that you're able to read that many comics over a weekend. I mean, that's impressive, I should say. But I'm just like, wow, that's a lot of reading. Holy mackerel.
It was. And that's part of why it didn't stick, you know? I was literally plowing through the equivalent of a long box.
Wow. Pretty amazing.
33 issues plus 7 annuals. 6 annuals, whichever. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But again, I've read a lot in the meanwhile. So not everything stays in the gray matter, you know?
Yeah, the brain can only hold so much, and then it kind of starts to take care of itself.
Pretty much. But like I said, I'm enjoying it, definitely noticing some storytelling changes. I'm curious if we're going to see more of that as Grell kind of winds up his run and how smooth the transition to the new writer is. And certainly starting next issue, how smooth the transition is to Dan Jurgens on the art for a while.
I'm looking forward to it.
Because I think he stays on the art until almost to issue 88, Unbroken. There's one issue, 79, that Pat Broderick does.
Oh, wow. That's a long run.
Yeah. And then we get a couple of other artists, and then we get Ron Randall pretty much for a bit, and then Jan Gesema comes later in the run of the title.
Cool.
So, fun stuff.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and fingers crossed things are good.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall, and thanks again for listening.